To begin with, for me at least, it was difficult to see a link between our readings for this morning and the themes for Remembrance Sunday. I wrestled with this as I was preparing this service. I couldn't ignore the date, which is so embedded in and sacred to the culture of our country. But I didn't want to pass up the opportunities the lectionary gives us today to consider these texts, where the experiences and actions of women take center stage. I could see the routes that other preachers might take, that Ruth's is a story about selflessness, pledging allegiance, security, and protection. That the widow's is a story of great sacrifice, of giving one's all. That both of these women, in some sense, lay down their lives in service of something greater than their own self-interests, and in doing so are heroic, worthy of our admiration and remembrance. The problem is, I can't preach that sermon. It turns a blind eye to so much that is deeply troubling in these passages from the Bible. And it glosses over so much that is horrifying about war. I agree that the women in these stories are courageous, their actions significant, their lives important. But if we celebrate their stories without critiquing the power structures that rendered them so vulnerable, then maybe we do them and all women a disservice. Let's look more closely at our reading from Ruth. First, I'll try and give a super quick recap of the story. Naomi, Elimelech, and their two sons live in Bethlehem, but due to famine, they're forced to leave. The family become refugees in Moab, a country that's not only foreign but also hostile to Israel. Nonetheless, the family settle. Elimelech dies. Naomi's sons marry Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. Then Naomi's sons also die, leaving all three women widows. Naomi says to her daughters-in-law, "There's nothing here for me now. I'm going to return to my own people." Ruth and Orpah set out to go with her. Naomi dissuades them, saying, "No, stay here. Your prospects will be better in your own land. You might marry again." Orpah heeds Naomi's words, but Ruth is stubborn and loyal. She sticks with Naomi, saying, "Your people will be my people. Your God, my God." Naomi and Ruth return to Israel, grieving, poor, desperate. It's the time of the barley harvest, so for food, Ruth goes to glean in the fields, gathering up the stray barley that the harvesters have left. There she meets the farmer Boaz, who happens to be a relative of Naomi, and who notices and perhaps is attracted to Ruth. He blesses her and shows her kindness, assuring her of his protection while she works in his field. When our reading for today picks up the story, Naomi and Ruth are facing desperate times again. The harvest is coming to an end. Now, what will they do for food? Naomi comes up with a risky plan. She tells Ruth to take off her widow's weeds, wash and anoint her body, and put on her best clothes. Then to wait until night and go to the threshing floor, where the farm workers will be sleeping after working hard and possibly drinking hard. She instructs Ruth to uncover Boaz's feet and lay down beside him, then to do as he asks. I find this part of the story chilling. Even more so when I learned that there may be more going on than what's explicitly stated. It's full of suggestion and innuendo. Feet, in that time and culture, was sometimes a euphemism for, let's just say, another part of the anatomy. The repeated verbs to lie down, to enter, to know, all have sexual connotations. The women's rescue plan is for Ruth to go alone, at night, into danger, to offer her body to this much older man in the hope that it will buy them his ongoing protection. Naomi asks Ruth to risk everything, her personal safety, her reputation. And Ruth is willing, because she is loyal to Naomi, sure, but also because she is desperate. What other options are open to them? They've lost so much already. They have barely anything left to lose. The plan goes to plan. Boaz is an honorable man. He does not abuse his power, but fulfills his responsibilities within the law and accepts Ruth's bold marriage proposal. Ruth and Naomi's protection and provision and their place within the community are secured and further strengthened when Ruth gives birth to a son. It's a complicated story, though, isn't it? There's a lot within it that feels and should feel uncomfortable. And before we jump to condemn this ancient culture from our superior, modern, enlightened, and liberated perspective, we must acknowledge its resonances in our own time. Where women continue to find themselves in situations where they are vulnerable, where they are sexually exploited, where they are in physical danger, where older men with wealth, power, and status are enabled, even facilitated, to commit acts of violence against women with impunity. Let's turn now to our gospel reading for this morning. Mark's Jesus draws the disciples' attention to a widow placing her last few coins into the temple treasury. He tells them that she has put in more than the rich worshippers who donate large sums, because they have given out of their abundance, and her comparatively tiny gift is everything to her, all that she had to live on. I don't know about you, but for me, there's discomfort in this story too. Discomfort that we should pay attention to. We should also pay attention to what Jesus doesn't say and to the wider context of his teaching, his words either side of this story. A bit like with our Ruth reading, I suspect many of us are over-familiar with this story, and we're used to hearing it presented in a certain way, with a certain message that glosses over much that is problematic. Notice this. Jesus points out the great cost of the widow's gift. He doesn't celebrate or commend her actions. Her actions, let's not forget, leave her completely destitute, with nothing left at all to feed or support herself. Jesus certainly doesn't condemn the widow or her actions either, but believe you me, he does have words of condemnation. In verses 38 to 40, he condemns the scribes, who like to walk around in long robes and to be greeted with respect in the marketplaces and to have the best seats in the synagogues and places of honor at banquets. He says they devour widows' houses and for the sake of appearance say long prayers. Jesus condemns those who have contributed to the situation of widows like the one before him. Those who exploit the poor while putting on a show of piety. And in the passage that follows the reading we heard this morning, Jesus condemns the temple itself, prophesying its destruction. He is disgusted with a system that would take the last coins of a widow while sanctifying the abuses of the rich and powerful. Like the prophets who came ahead of him and the prophets who have come after, he asserts that this is not the worship that God desires. The widow's gift symbolizes the failure of the temple system, where the burden of tax is disproportionately borne by the poor, where the most vulnerable are not being sheltered and provided for, where religion is being misused to reinforce inequality and privilege. What has any of this got to do with Remembrance Sunday? Good question. Here is my very imperfect answer. Much like our readings for today, Remembrance Sunday is complicated. We can celebrate Ruth and Naomi's courage, ingenuity, faithfulness to one another, and restoration to community, while being honest about the difficult parts of the story. Their situation highlights the plight of other refugees and disadvantaged people, those who have no choice but to take risks and resort to desperate measures to find safety. In their story, God is at work within a patriarchal system. This does not mean that God condones it. We can honour the generosity of the widow in Mark's gospel and celebrate that Jesus sees and understands her plight while sharing in Jesus's righteous anger at the system which leaves her destitute. And we can honour the lives of those who have fought for this country in wartime, giving thanks for the freedoms we enjoy, without glorifying war itself, or conflating the sovereignty of our nation with the sovereignty or purposes of God. We can be honest about the fact that wartime sees both courage and carnage, both heroic sacrifice and horrific waste. This is not a day for triumphalism or militarism, certainly not in the church at any rate. It's a day for collective grief, for the young lads of Wheatley who left to fight and never came home, or came home damaged in mind or body. For the fact that war rages on still, blowing up children and burying them under rubble, creating ever more widows and refugees. And it's a day for righteous anger and renewed resolve, to pray and campaign for peace, to expose and dismantle injustice, to acknowledge our privilege and use our power as a force for good. Sometimes, all it takes is a single lit candle in the darkness to start a movement. May we be candles of hope in this world. May we burn with peace. Amen.